How can Christians have an impact on social issues on the global level? I'm your host, Dr. Rich Hoffman. On this episode of Ask Christian Counseling Associates, we are podcasting from Caldwell, New Jersey, during our visit to the United Nations, with special guests Millie Lace and Josephine Tyne from Concepts of Truth International. Join us as we discuss what God has ignited in the life-affirming movement of Concepts of Truth and how Christians everywhere can have an impact for the kingdom. Millie, it's great to have you. And we were just at the UN, and now we're back in Caldwell, New Jersey. And so tell me, just looking back, and it took us about an hour to get back to what we'll have now. It's just the time to reflect on your experience at the UN, Concepts of Truth International, and how you got into all of this. So where do you want to start? Just tell everybody about yourself, because you didn't get a chance to talk in the last segment.
That was good. Yeah, I will. That's fine. No, the last segment was so important, right? Because it was some of our friends that we've met through the years. But yeah, so I'm Millie Lace, and I'm the founder and director of Concepts of Truth. We say Inc. at the UN because that's how we're accredited, but we're also known as Concepts of Truth International.
Okay.
But yeah, so we're a nonprofit counseling organization, and we direct a 24/7 helpline for reproductive loss and sexual trauma. And we also have some models on for prevention, like for sexual health, and we've written, you know, these curricula that some of them have been translated. And
okay.
So anyway, we do professional counseling on a sliding scale based on your income and your need. And we, my husband and I, we started the nonprofit, actually incorporated it in 1998. We opened for services in 2001. And when we opened for services, we were Concepts of Truth Professional Counseling and Care Pregnancy Center because of a heart of mine that, you know, I was a licensed professional in private practice, and the Lord just kept pricking my heart that I was supposed to speak out more on an abortion in my past. And so I really had the heart for all the care pregnancy pieces, right, of healing and prevention. But we quickly, in 2003, we opened 2001, we quickly just seemed like to get into this national scene of, we heard about overturning Roe v. Wade and all this, and we met some attorneys out of Texas, and they had these affidavits for men and women to sign that wanted to see Roe v. Wade overturned.
Mm-hmm.
And so the counselor in me, you know, here I was ready to sign the affidavit if this could be used in a court or whatever. But the counselor in me just went up to these attorneys and I said, do these people who are signing this, have they had any kind of recovery or healing or counseling? And he goes, I don't know. We're not counselors. Are you? And I said, well, yes, sir, I am. And I'm concerned about that. And he said, you got a number we can use? I said,
yeah, he was interested.
Yeah. And so I'm like, well, yeah, let me talk to our board about that. And so very quickly, our helpline number, which was very small and just used as a local resource, you know, for the first 3 years, it went on a TV program. It went on the back of those affidavits to help overturn Roe v. Wade. And so we started getting more calls.
So we've talked at least half a dozen times in meetings. You were active in the effort to get Roe v. Wade overturned.
Well, we were active in helping the people who were signing the affidavits, telling their story, right, to get it overturned. We were active in, if you need to talk and you need help or healing, call us.
So post-abortive trauma, mm-hmm. people who have made a decision to have an abortion and then have experienced damage because of that.
Absolutely.
Explain that more, and definitely want to put your number out there.
Absolutely.
Too, just so that people listening to this would have that.
Right. So the number is 866-482-LIFE or 866-482-5433, and we answer 24/7. And that's really a unique ministry in itself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so but explain more about
post-abortive trauma.
Post-abortion trauma. You know, you won't find it in the DSM or the DSM-5. You won't find it.
Right, and you won't hear this talked about in many churches. On our ride over, we've talked about some pastors who even though they're biblically conservative, they'll bring up examples of you don't want to be like that person who's protesting outside the abortion clinic and being abrasive because these people have gone through a lot and they need our support. And we talk about those kind of things, maybe. Mm-hmm. We don't talk about people who've had abortions and what in the aftermath of that has been like for them. You've heard a lot of these stories.
I've heard a lot, and I've also, my husband and I have experienced that pain. And so that was really the foundation of Concepts of Truth, to have a nonprofit, mm-hmm. because I knew professionally that there were a lot of, you know, interventions and things that helped me, right? I didn't really have professional counseling, but I had had a recovery for the abortion and for grief and for loss. And so the more that I was talking with clients in sessions, you know, for a myriad of different presenting issues, you know, where it was marriage, relationships, whether it was depression or whatever, the Lord just kept really pricking my heart, Dr. Hoffman, because we talked about this too today about the vulnerability of being transparent, you know, mm-hmm. That's so needed today to help people know that, you know, they're not alone and that we listen to them. And so in my sessions, I was in private practice for a while. And before that, I was a school counselor. And so, but anyway, I was so taught, you know, that we don't disclose personal, you know, things about ourselves. And so I was taught that, and I didn't go to a Christian, you know, higher education. It was a state school.
Sure.
But in all of my practice, it never failed that I would feel pricked by the Holy Spirit to say, you know, I've also experienced depression. I wasn't telling them that to be needy. Mm-hmm. You know, I was sharing that so I could sort of level the ground. And immediately, in any time that, you know, I may not even say why, you know, but if I said anything, you know, like, you know, wow, I may not understand your situation, but, you know, I had a situation in my life one time. And immediately, you know, everything softened in the counseling session, and I saw them relax and, you know, just be more trusting and more, you know, willing to share. And so the Lord just kept pricking my heart that I needed to be more open with my story than that Dell and I did. And so, I started sharing more about it. Dell and I were married. I'll share a little bit of it.
Sure,
just my testimony.
Do.
Yeah. Dell and I were married, and we had a 3-year-old son. And I was taking an experimental drug for a tumor on my bladder. We were active church members. My husband Dell was a deacon in the church. We led children's church, you know, all the above, very active and loved the Lord. In a very Bible, you know, based church. And yet, you know, I knew, I mean, and I'd heard it. This was in, my abortion was in 79. Roe v. Wade, you know, became legal. It was 73.
Yes.
So, you know, abortion was talked about. I mean, I was never going to do that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But in our case, I was taking this experimental drug for a tumor on my bladder, and they had to inject it. And I went for all of these treatments. And finally, I was at our local just primary care physician, and he was doing a checkup. And he said, oh, my gosh, you're pregnant. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, that's good news. He mm-hmm. said, oh, no, that's not good news. And I said, well, why? And, you know, I was by myself that day. And he says, well, you've been taking this, you know, it's called DMSO. I could go into it. It has a big, long name, you know, this experimental treatment. And he says, oh, you could die. He said, or your baby could be a monster. You'll never forgive yourself. Hmm. And I remember now, I didn't remember then, that he put his hand up and he says, now I know how you believe. Hmm. He knew I was a Christian. He knew my faith based, you know, but I didn't remember it in the whole time of making the quick decision. He goes, but I know how you believe. He said, but if you were my wife, he said, listen, you need to go and have a DNC. That's a dilation and cutterage. He didn't say the word abortion. He said, you need to go have a DNC quickly before the baby's heart starts beating. He said, and then you can have other pregnancies. Hmm. I go home that day very shaken and, you know, telling my husband, Dale, about it. We called our both sets of our parents, who were very active in their church, church homes. Our parents came over. We may have prayed for 5 minutes. I remember getting down on the knees, and this is, it was like I was trusting them to tell me something. But what they did was they patted me, they hugged me and said, "Oh, baby, you really need to go ahead and do what the doctor's telling you to do." So in that moment in time, Dr. Hoffman, I went, and I felt the relief that I've heard so many hundreds of callers say that they felt relief, you know, to finally go. And I've experienced that. It was like this relief, because you're like, you feel like you're pressed up against a wall. You don't know what to do in some of these cases. Now take it, you know, our case was like the mother's health exception, right? Mm-hmm. So I kept immediately thinking, oh, you know, mother's health. But really, I wasn't thinking about abortion until they gave us a number and told us to go.
So there's this point where we say no abortion except for when the mother's life is threatened. And that was the situation that the doctor was telling you was imminent.
That's
and
right.
And your parents were saying, you could die, right. Listen to the doctor.
That's right.
And so you were in that very situation.
That's right. And however, they sent me to a Planned Parenthood 2 hours away in Little Rock, Arkansas, from we lived in Wynn at that time. And when we drove up, I still have the vivid memory of the signs that people hold. They were outside that clinic and it said, "Save your baby." And this is what I did. I ducked down in the seat. I said, "Honey, they don't know why we're here, do they? We were not there to take the life of a baby. We were not. I thought I need to get rid of some tissue because I was told before the baby's heart starts beating." I was 7 weeks pregnant. We go in. It was the suction abortion, but you pay your money. And this is where the reality hit me, was immediately afterwards. And I say this, and I don't mean to be dramatic or anything, but this is my story. And I was 25 years old and sitting outside the recovery, we were sitting and they were offering us juice and some cookies and you're shaking. And this young teenage girl looked at me, and we were all different cultures, you know, she looks at me, "Was yours a boy or a girl?" And I went,
"Oh, oh my."
And that moment, you know, I breathed in. I didn't say another word. I didn't talk to Dale on the way home. He didn't talk to me. For 2 hours, we get home and I started hemorrhaging. And at that moment, I called my mom, crying, screaming, "What did I do?" She says, "Oh, baby, if we could have just trusted God." She said, "Let's just don't talk about this anymore." I don't blame my mom for anything, you know, for any of that. I've worked through all that forgiveness. But that night, I did not call an emergency room. We did not go. I cried myself to sleep and asked my husband, "What did we do?" And here's where the justification starts. Mm-hmm. Honey, we did what we had to do. So for 12 years, that was my depression at night, my mask. No one knew. I went to church. I played the piano. I wore my mask. I wasn't going to tell a soul. And I didn't for 12 years. I would go to the altar saying, "God, if I've sinned, forgive me. If I've sinned." So we, I can go through
so there was
many layers.
Very quick decision, though, and how things turn out to bury that. For 12 years.
And push it down. You try to push those things down, and it's going to be like trying to push a beach ball under the water. It's just going to pop back up.
Yeah.
I had times after that, a few months after, the doctor said, you know, you can get pregnant again, have another baby. You never can replace a life. My oldest son has always said abortion affects as many lives as a single life could. And so in my third pregnancy, I wanted to hurt myself. I didn't have suicidal attempts where I wanted to, you know, turn on the gas on the oven, but I was in church. We were constantly in church, constantly in the Word of God. If it had not been for that security of that, you know, and knowing that I was a child of God, but see, God saw my rationalization. He saw all where I was. He saw that I was for sure confused, but I had to work through that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think sometimes, you know what, God, during those 12 years, He's a patient and loving God. And He was patient with me. And so until I heard another woman give her testimony and be bold enough to say, there is hope and there is healing after an abortion, I was like, how do you even say that word, you know, in a pulpit or to, a, you know, out in the public? Mm-hmm. So I understand the shame. I understand the pain, the psychological distress, the depression, the suicidal thoughts, like, and some have suicidal attempts. And I would absolutely want to punch myself in the stomach for the third pregnancy, but I wouldn't, but I wanted to, and I would be angry at God, and I would walk through the hallway and I'd say, God, just take this one. I don't deserve a baby. So, but no one knew those things except my husband for 12 years. Yeah. But the beauty of God's grace is that it is grace. And He is a forgiving God. And I have had to tell so many women and men, we think it's an unforgivable sin. And it's very hard to accept that you have taken the life of a human being. But when we accept that and we work through the grief, we work through the anger, the denial, you know, you're in denial and you're working through all these different, we call them stages of grief, but honestly, it's a process and you're going back and forth, you know, and all of this. But sure. Until I worked through that, and I would sit up at night writing. I was in this recovery group, and I'll never forget, you know, I was writing and I was sobbing and, this is good, you know, this is good. My husband would say, oh, honey, please come to bed. I said, no, leave me alone. You know, I had to work through it. Mm-hmm. And the beauty of it all is about 2 years later, my husband worked through his, when the reality of he attending a memorial service with me for our daughter, we named her Jill Allison. Mm-hmm. And he attended a memorial, and God began to work on his heart, and he couldn't justify it anymore either. And so, you know, through all of that, God gave that heart to want to help someone else.
Yeah.
And I know I've talked a long time, but
well, you're clearly sharing a time of deep inner turmoil that happens after this, and doing this in private.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
No one had any idea that this was going on. And to add to that, your husband also.
Absolutely. If he was here, and he said it before many times on, you know, with his testimony, he says, you know, I never got to walk my daughter, you know, I never got to walk her down the football field for homecoming queen or, you know, plan a wedding, you know, or anything. Yeah. And, I, you know, so it's reality. But the hope is we will see our children one day, you know, because that was a soul. I was 7 weeks pregnant. I mean, you know, we have so many. You know, so much science today, you know, we know after 21 days, the heart's beating. And So when we, you know, accept all of that and move to from that, it's like, what's amazing to me when you talk about the church, and I love the church. I love, you know, I love God's people. I love pastors, but you are so right. There's so many, I think, different kinds of trauma that we don't talk about, and we don't talk about personal, what we think private things, but what God has shown us at Concepts of Truth, and to Him be the glory. Once we, in a sense, focused on a specific trauma, because we were very much so, not in our professional counseling. You know, we saw children, youth, and families on myriad of issues, but in our recovery and on our helpline, it was specifically, you know, at first for abortion recovery. And we've seen so many, you know, experience the freedom that can come, and then for them to help someone else.
Yes.
So it is the ripple effect, you know?
Well, three things. First, that recovery started with somebody getting up and admitting that they were in pain and had suffered.
Absolutely.
That triggered in you to seek healing and recovery.
And that night, I'll never forget when I heard this lady, I thought, I got to talk to this lady. You know, and she lived 2 hours away. I waited till she got home. I got on the phone, you know, because I whispered to her very quietly, you know, at the end of the, you know, it was a church service. I whispered to her. Her situation was totally different. You know, she wasn't married at the time. She had whatever. But the commonality was, you know, we had both taken a human life. And I just whispered to her, I need to talk with you sometime.
Yeah, you reached out to her.
I reached out to her that very night at midnight.
Yeah.
And I'm calling and I'm crying and I'm letting, and yeah. My husband was not home at that time. He was off. Dale was in the National Guard, okay. Army National Guard, and he was off at a camp and a training. The next day, I took our boys out of school. We drove to Little Rock, Arkansas. I found him at the camp, wherever. I like, we got to talk. You know, so, I mean, immediately there was movement of release. Of,
what a wise decision to take. Because sometimes even people, they get that notion and they just let it go by. So that'd be the first thing that is really interesting to me. Second, what your son says is that just as many lives as that person's life would have touched is the people who've been affected.
Absolutely.
And so it was you and your husband, but so much more.
They're called sibling survivors. You know, my oldest son has many times said, you know, I need to write a book, Mom, about the Allison gap. You know, there, he's got, you know, a younger brother. And so I have two boys, but in the middle I would have had, you know, a daughter, and or we feel like that the Lord revealed that to us, and yes. You know, and He can do those things. He can give you a dream. Yes. We've both dreamed about her. It's amazing what how God designed us when we've tried to push back the pain, when we release that, you know, in our hearts and in our minds, what He can reveal to us. It's amazing.
Yeah, you know, and the third thing, the doctor, who says you need to do this. I remember with every one of our children, there was, you need to have this test. And if it comes back positive,
we're
going to have to make a decision.
They do that.
And how many people take those tests and are thinking, wow, there's a choice now.
Mm-hmm.
And at a very vulnerable time, that suggestion being made, what do we, looking back personally, professionally, what do we say to the doctors who are in this moment, given what you know now?
Well, in my case, I had to write him a letter, you know, because I had to tell him how angry I was, you know, and I had to forgive him. So what do we say to them? You know, I mean, I think people trust that authority. You know, and we're vulnerable to that, right? I mean, the medical professional, because we've had, you know, many callers, you know, that were in my position, you know, and they were told the same thing. And I would say, you know, I'm going to ask you to trust God for 24 hours. You know, don't make a rash decision. You know, if you can trust God for 24 hours, and then that 24 hours, you know, you ask Him again, you know, and we've had callers to say, you know, that, and everybody's got a place, you know, in this type of field, I guess you would say, in the pregnancy world and the pregnancy care centers and all of this. But, you know, there are those people that stand, like you said, you know, outside the abortion clinic and all that. Mm-hmm. That was never our, you know, mission at all. We were in the healing component. But we've had callers to say, you know, they got this card, someone talked with them before they went into the clinic. They were in the clinic and they had been praying themselves that God would give them a sign, you know, that this was wrong. I mean, because they're in this conflict big time, because especially once they've seen an ultrasound. But many times the problem is that, you know, the ultrasound is turned, or they're angry because they didn't get a chance to see the baby. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't let me see the baby, you know, and then, you know, after, and especially today with all the chemical abortions, the trauma is enormous, and we could talk about this for the rest of the, you know, time, but it's been a journey. It's been a beautiful journey of God using our story. And I guess I just encourage everyone, you know, to give yourself permission to share with a trustworthy person that you trust.
Mm.
Because we've heard time and time again, you know, I was afraid to tell, but when I did share, like say with my husband or my kids or my mom or whatever, it's like they just loved them more, you know. And I think the enemy of our soul puts that fear, you know, in us. Mm-hmm. But when we're vulnerable and transparent, and then someone loves us for who we are, you know, they're not going to turn their back on you, you know. That's been the majority, I would say. You know, I know there's probably, you know, different circumstances, but the majority of ours and our callers have said that once they've shared, they've had such a freedom. And then, of course, we've directed them to either professional counselors or we've directed them to recovery groups, you know, all over the U.S. And so quickly on our helpline, we had we started getting calls from every state in the nation is what's been unbelievable. So we've had over
20.
All over the country in different parts of the world. Yeah. And so that led us to the UN in a sense.
Yeah. So we could talk about the UN. And I just, before we go on to this, your organization has a bunch of curriculum on this. And there's so many people who are just searching for another perspective on this. Not only those who have been through this, but pastors who are seeking how to really minister to this issue.
Absolutely.
And families who are looking to somehow find a way to heal. Tell them what's available that you have to offer.
We have a model that was staff written from our experiences. And then I feel like I know from my experience in being, you know, a professional counselor, I feel like that some of the interventions that we use, we have a lot of experiential hands-on activities that we do in the model. And we have an art workshop in the model. So ours is called Concepts of Recovery, The Journey. It's available on Amazon. It's also available in Mandarin Chinese. We're working on a Spanish translation that we're just not quite, seem like things just get in the way. But
Concepts of Recovery, The Journey.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And it's written for men and women. And we have an endorsement by Dr. Jared Pingleton. He's a part of American Association of Christian Counselors.
Dr. Jared Pingleton.
At the time he wrote our endorsement, he was with Focus on the Family. And we had met him at AACC, actually.
American Association of Christian Counselors.
At a conference. We go there pretty much to all the world conferences and set up a booth.
So do we. I mean, we don't set up a booth, but yeah. We go there.
And so we were there one time, and you've met Sherry from our team. And Sherry felt a real big tug, and just so happened she met Dr. Pingleton, and she made a contact and wanted him to look over our curriculum. And so his endorsement says several things, but the part I remember is that this curriculum is clinically and scripturally sound, and it was God given, because you know, when it's your heart and you've written from, you know, your experience, and we don't just refer to ourselves, you know, I mean, through the years we've had people in our office that say, man, really, you know, we get calls and, you know, you're referring to, you know, some other group. I said, you know, we can't, it's like someone mentioned today, you know, I think about there's a lot of hurting people, and we know that we don't have, you know,
There's so much, and we want people to check out that resource.
Christian Counseling Associates is ready to serve you, providing a wide range of counseling services. Christian counseling is accessible to everyone. We serve both Christians who want their faith integrated into the counseling process, or those holding any beliefs or attitudes toward spirituality. With many years of counseling experience, our counselors are professional, licensed, highly trained, and rooted in their commitment to their church and communities. CCA is able to provide a full range of clinical counseling services. For more information, visit our website at www.ccawpa.com.
So, Millie, you get calls from all around the country, from other countries, and that leads us to the UN. This is my official United Nations badge for entry into the United Nations at New York City.
Absolutely.
And we've just spent a couple of days at the UN.
Yes.
Fantastic, amazing kind of things that are going on there. People from around the country that we got to meet. And we had the chance to have the conversations about mental health in different countries. Mm-hmm. And it just so happens that everybody that we talk to, they're now in the United States, mm-hmm. certainly reflecting on things. I'm interested in the times that you've had there. What got you involved?
Yeah, sure.
And what is it all about? What are you doing?
Okay, so after we opened Concepts of Truth for Services in 2001, like I told you, we met many people on a national level and just happened to be, you know, going, sharing testimony at times and meeting people from all over. And I met this lady, and she called me one day and she says, hey, she says, you know, the United Nations needs some volunteers. You want to go? And I said, anyway, I would tell the whole story, but I was shocked, you know, and I was like, well, sure, I'll go and help. I don't know what we'd be doing. So in 2004, I believe was the very first year I went, And I went as a volunteer under some pro-life groups, okay? And so they were working with
the U.S. pro-life movement operating within the United Nations.
They were. So there were these groups, and they were actually lobbying, I guess you would say, then, because they were working with the U.S. mission, who at that time was very conservative. And so they were trying to influence a document, like a resolution that, you know, the conference that they were in, at the end of the conference, they would be voting on certain things. And so their goal was to keep the language out that would say that abortion is a universal human right. So I'm like, oh, I'm all for helping anyone to say that abortion is not a, you know, I mean, for them trying to say that it was a human right, that it was a universal human right. So I went and volunteered some time. I think we were there one time, like for a week or 2 weeks, whatever. I immediately felt at home. I mean, it was like I loved it. I love people. I love the multicultural aspect of it, people from all over the world. Sure. So I went under this NGO, I think from England at that time.
So and, NGO is non-governmental.
Yeah, organization, which is really a nonprofit, right? It's a nonprofit.
It's a nonprofit that operates.
It's just
under
a nonprofit.
Some interest. It's like an interest group that has an agenda that it wants to
do internationally. Yeah, or your grassroots, wherever you are in your country, whatever your services are. So, like Concepts of Truth, actually, you know, it took us a while to figure it out.
I don't want to sidetrack us too much.
Okay.
However, the Christian community has a lot of different thoughts about the UN.
Yeah.
And we're not going to say anything personally about the UN. We're just talking about perceptions in general. And, you know, one of my favorite is Left Behind. If you ever have seen the movie series, now it's, you know, years ago now, old school. They cast the devil coming up out of the UN. You know, that's how the world's going to end, is and you definitely have this one world order appeal in the book of Revelation.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could think that, hey, that's the UN.
Mm-hmm.
It would be fair for me to say some people would regard that as a pretty evil place, you know, and again, that's certainly not what we're going to say personally. That perception's out there. What are some of the other perceptions do you think people have of the United Nations?
Yeah, because I think when they see that we're accredited with the United Nations, they're wondering how in the world,
what's,
you know,
Willie
someone
Lace
from
Wynn,
Arkansas
there?
Get going. Yeah. So after several years of volunteering, okay, and going almost on an annual basis from 2004 to around 2012, 2013, so I don't know, 7 years or so, right? We were starting to get calls, you know, from other countries, and we had changed in our, not changed our name, but we had added the Concepts of Truth International, you know, to our name. Mm-hmm. And so we had a logo that was a nation at the first. It was the national helpline, you know, and then we wanted to be international. So we had a board member, and he says, well, I just have a question. He said, we just got to change our logo. He says, we're getting these calls. And he says, and yeah, you're going to the UN and, you know, you're volunteering, but you say you're not under Concepts of Truth. And I said, oh, no, you know, we have to be under an accredited, you know, NGO. And by that time, I had begun to ask, and so my friends, we saw people presenting, right, presenting these sessions in these conferences, but yet some of the groups we were with, they were here working on this document. And I'm like, well, we have stories to share. You know, I want to share with people about our, you know, our model for recovery and all this. How could we do that? And they said, well, there's a process. So we learned that, you know, there was a protocol for proposals, right?
Right.
But
and I've heard you talk about just the process of becoming Concepts of Truth International. It's a struggle. It was a battle to get into the UN.
Oh.
And what you're mentioning is that there's competing forces here. There's interest groups that want to all over the world make abortion a human right.
That's true.
And so one of the things that the UN is interested in is human rights.
That's true.
And so forces could get in there and say, well, if the world's going to care about human rights, then give everybody abortions, or make sure that every doctor is in every place around the world saying, you need to do this. And you saw that. And it was time to get involved.
Well, and because also in the Charter of the UN, there's one of the articles that say, you know, that they're for life, liberty, and the security of persons. So you think about the, you know,
just
preborn
sort of like life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Exactly. So, and so we're talking about life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're talking about security of persons, you know. And so, you know, if you want to call the preborn child a person, a human person, and I do, I want to call it a human being. Yeah. And so along that vein.
I mean, you're talking about getting involved for the lives of unborn children all over the world, the opportunities there in the United Nations.
Well, our goal was that, you know, when our board wanted us to start the process, which was very, you know, it's very arduous, it's lengthy, and but God was truly in it, because we did not compromise anything about our Christian faith or who we were. We were told by many, many pro-life Christian groups that we were told, do not mention the A word, do not mention, you know, that you're Christian. And I said, well, that won't work. You mean like when we're going before this panel to be accredited? I said, that won't work, because that's who we are. Mm. And all of a sudden, the Lord just kept really reminding us of our focus. Our focus is on serving and helping people heal, yeah, you know, and educate and be informed. Someone asked me right after we got accredited and we were having an event, we had, you know, invites, right? And we wanted people to come. And I had this lady on the elevator. I said, you know, may I invite you to our event? You know, and that's what people do. Sure. Yeah. So when she looked at our event, she goes, are you pro-life or pro-choice? And something, Dr. Hoffman, just stuck right here. And all of a sudden, I don't know how to answer. And this thing just comes out. And I said, I'm pro-informed choice. And it sort of scared me. And I thought, what in the world did I just say? But truly, God gave us a choice from the beginning when He made man, right?
You know,
but
you want people to have an informed choice.
We want
if you're talking to the UN, that's the way that you're going to say
informed choice.
I want people to choose life,
and that's the right,
and have the information that they need to make the right choice.
Exactly, and
wow,
then it's their choice.
That is so wise, and that's. That's some of the stuff that happens.
Right. And then so we learned that, you know, it's a very diplomatic environment.
Yeah.
And when you love people, or you're here to serve, and you see people as human beings, and you see the confusion, and you see what you have to offer. So,
yeah,
you know, we're there in that vein.
Let me just add, some Christians, evangelicals, or whatever denomination might be listening to this and say, it's really not our place to get involved in that kind of stuff. You know, that might sound great, wow, Millie, that you're doing that. Really, we need to be about saving souls or bringing people into the church. This is too much like getting involved in government. You know, I've heard so many things. And then maybe the notion that they're not even going to accept us here. This is going to be offensive. And it's not true. And I find the same thing with our foundation. We were invited to a casino to give a pitch. They're going to give us $10,000. It was the Westmoreland Community Foundation in Pennsylvania. We were very thankful for that donation. And we were thinking, you know, wow, what is a Christian organization going to say there? And we found a way that people from the church or outside of the church can get together is we care about people who are alone, who are hurting, who are lost.
Yeah.
We don't want to see them destroyed.
Absolutely.
And I said that in front of that room, and there are people who are definitely outside of the church. And we said, you know, you might not know what Christian means, but this is what I would like you to know, what Christian means.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it means so much more than that. You know, being a Christian is about following Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. But we can get along and work together and then discover more of what the Lord has for us.
Absolutely.
If we can start there.
Absolutely.
And so it's a way of meeting people where they're at. And we found that there's so many people in the community that'll join with us on
right.
that. And all of a sudden, they'll meet us mm-hmm. everywhere that we go.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting, and I know maybe our time is short, but what's interesting to me in the very first, like I said, when we got accredited, all of a sudden, you know, we were not lobbying. We were there with our models under our, you know, accreditation, our name, because when we were in front of the committee, I remember stating, you know, the Christian faith is we're of the Christian faith. That is our identity. We are here to serve all people. And then I had a lady, a representative from Iraq, raise her little flag, and she says, "How did you get calls, you know, from Iraq?" And I said, "Well, our number was like in a military resource book, you know, and so they found our number and they called us, you know." She says, "Okay," and then you know, some other questions, and we were just transparent, and we weren't trying to hide anything because we had something to offer.
Yeah.
And we felt like that, like one of our first proposals that got approved, you know, whether it's a written statement that's an official UN document, or we're actually getting to make a presentation on our models or whatever. It's like, what's amazing is we've had up to 16 different countries, you know, represented, and then them being able to take that information back to their countries and their villages, because we've learned that many people are coming to the UN. Yes, there's the government piece of the, you know, their government has sent them to vote on a certain, you know, resolution or whatever, but they're also coming for some help, right? They're coming for some practical model of something they can take back. And so many times, whether it's Muslims, Christians, whatever, coming to our sessions, they're leaving happy.
If you think of what we had the opportunity as a group to meet with today, people, a person from India, Colombia, mm-hmm. Argentina, at least we had access to that, the Philippines. Mm-hmm. And what I experience when we are in a place where people are searching, that they're hungry for more, and they've encountered something in their life that they know they're desperate to step back what the world has to offer,
mm-hmm.
or to step past what the world has to offer. And that is a place of true opportunity, where people are genuine, they're transparent, and they're searching, mm-hmm. and we can be in that place.
Absolutely.
And so I'm grateful that you're in the United Nations and working, and man, this was such a neat thing.
Yeah,
you know,
it's been amazing.
I knew it was going to be. This is the first time I've been to the United Nations. When I was 13, I was in New York City, and we might have rode past it. Mm-hmm. But we walked all the way through that and met all kinds of people. Mm-hmm. Very important work that Christians can do.
Absolutely.
In these types of places.
Absolutely. And it was such an honor to, you know, have y'all on our team and get you the passes. And you know, that's the beauty of it. Just like, you know, with our accreditation, we get so many annual passes to different, you know, conferences and things, and you know, there's no charge. And I just want to say, you know, Concepts of Truth gets no UN money, you know, we're not even applying for that. I mean, we're there. You know, we're there to serve and to, you know, see the hurting world, because it is the world. I always say the UN is the world at your fingertips.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's a great, great mission field.
Okay. So Concepts of Truth International, NGO at the United Nations, pro-life movement all over the world. By getting in contact with the UN, you have that opportunity.
Yeah, and we actually say life-affirming, because, you know, sometimes pro-life, pro-choice seems to divide people. You know,
as a term, absolutely.
There's a life-affirming and remain approachable. And when we do that, you know, we're not there to argue. We're not there to proselytize.
Yeah, so what's the term that you used again? Just say it one more time.
Life-affirming. And remain approachable.
And remain approachable. Life affirming and remain approachable.
If we do those two things, you know, and we're meeting a stranger, and, you know, we're not here to argue, you know, we're here to talk, right? We're here to meet you as a person. I love some of your podcasts when you say, you know, we just need to have discourse, you know. I mean, where is the interaction with people who may think or believe different than we do, you know? And but that's okay, you know, we can glean from another human being something, you know. And I've made many friends. I have a friend from Egypt that every year when she sees me at the UN, she'll say, "Millie," and I say, you know, "Amelia," you know, whatever. And it's just like because we have a bond, and she's of the Muslim faith, but there's a bond there that, you know, we respect each other. We're not there, like I said, in any presentation to harass or do anything like that. We're there to be representative of who we are, right? And that's the beauty of that, to me, of the United Nations, is that everyone can come there and be who they are. They should be allowed to do it.
Well, Millie, thanks for the work that you do, and thanks for getting us into the UN.
Yeah.
Wow. Just a great day to spend with you and the organization.
Great. Maybe it won't be the last time.
God bless you.
Hello, I'm David Collins with Christian Counseling Associates, in particular the Foundation for Christian Counseling. I'm also a licensed professional counselor. Just talk to you a minute about what the Foundation does and what we can provide. You know, we strengthen the local communities, the families. We create this foundation. We do that through supporting marriages and marriage tune-up. We do that through supporting individuals in parenting and Christian active parenting. We also are community support, and obviously each of those people are located in the community, and so we seek to connect those folks with our partner churches. We really engage with helping people in those times, in those floods of their life where they're in crisis. And that crisis, we help to point them, we help to shine a light towards the foundation, the rock that is Christ. We really seek and aim to meet those people in crisis, to let them know that we care, that there's a way forward, that we can keep things accessible as far as support and help through the particular foundation grants that we offer. And that is just a bit about the vision and the mission that Foundation for Christian Counseling is after. Your giving transforms communities one family at a time.
So, Josephine, you are a representative to the United Nations with Concepts of Truth. Tell me about that. Tell me what you do and what you're passionate about in the work here.
Yes, I've been with Concepts of Truth for almost 7 years. And essentially what I do for them at the United Nations is I write written statements that are circulated through the United Nations and publicly made available within the organization. Hmm. I sometimes make oral statements for a few minutes, and I also attend conferences at the UN, and I also gather youth for panel side events, which are presentations that are made on site at the United Nations. Okay. And we've done that every year. We get youth together to make presentations at the United Nations to represent Concepts of Truth.
So you work with youth and students, and you go up in front of the assembly in what would be like conference rooms. Just to get a better idea about that, tell us like a
okay, I'll break it down and discuss each one a little bit.
Yeah, or maybe what that might be like when you're talking in front of a group at the UN.
Sure. Well, it varies. Sometimes I attend events that other nonprofit organizations called NGOs put on. And at the end, I might raise my hand and make comments and try to relate what they do to what we do. And basically, I look for opportunities to put a good face on an organization that believes that life begins at conception. And that means talking about the fact that on the other side of the political issue of abortion, there are real people who have suffered real pain and had real consequences who need to be recognized for that, not stigmatized. So that's one message that I try to get across. Yeah. And so I might do that at the end of an event, raise my hand and make a comment, or I might ask to make an oral statement after a bigger session at the UN, and they give different NGOs opportunities to speak for a few minutes. And in that speech, I'll talk about the fact that Concepts of Truth has an international helpline. We've had almost 20,000 calls, or actually more at this point, from women
that's a lot of calls.
A lot of calls.
Yeah.
People who are really suffering consequences, physical, emotional, spiritual consequences of having aborted their babies.
Yeah.
And so it's an opportunity to talk about the human side of things.
So let me know, we were talking with Millie, and she is a licensed counselor, clinician. You're not a counselor. You're by trade an attorney. and certainly in the church, Christian. You know, how does somebody get into this kind of thing? You know, you're an hour away from the UN. You know, we're here in New Jersey, and some people might not know just geographically that this is like right next to New York City. So you're here, but how do you find your way from like a local church to getting involved in something like this? How did that happen for you?
It was completely unexpected, and just the Lord drop this in our laps. And the way it happened was that we live in Caldwell, and back in 2015, I guess, or 16, Millie Lace, the founder and director of Concepts of Truth, moved to our town, and there was a big write-up about the organization on the front page of our local paper, to which we subscribed. And I and our five children were looking at this article. We were homeschooling at the time, and I told our kids, look at this Christian organization. They're pro-life. They've moved to our town. They're probably going to get some hate mail. Let's call and encourage them.
Wow.
So we did that, and we said, we're here. We homeschool. We're around if you need any help with anything. And Millie Lace talked to us on the phone and said, we're doing a 5K if you're around to help us out with that. So we were around to help out with that. And then after that, I guess we started talking about the beginnings of their efforts at the UN and the fact that the United Nations really likes to hear the voices of youth. So she said, you know, it'd be great if we could do an event at the United Nations and have some youth to represent us.
Yeah.
Do you know who might want to do that? Well, a couple of our kids were involved in speech and debate. So I said, I know lots of kids who might want to do that. And so that began our tradition of pulling kids from homeschool speech and debate to participate in these annual events and do presentations.
Wow. That's great.
Yeah.
You saw a Christian organization in the paper and said, I want to help that out. And that leads all the way to the UN and getting involved at a really high level. And I've been working with you for a couple of days and Millie, and you're very humble about, you know, what you do. I think that, you know, you don't put it that way that you're at a high level, but to get even into the UN, most people, you know, don't even get there. So, so this has been, in taking that step, God opens this door for you and your family and a whole bunch of people that, you know, with children or not children, but
high
students.
School students, sometimes college. Yeah.
Yeah.
To give them that opportunity, who are passionate about life. And it is pretty amazing. Once before COVID, when we were live every time, at the end of these presentations, we would have discourse with people. Some of them were not happy. You know, the UN tends to lean very pro-abortion. And people would slide into our event not knowing what to expect. Some would be angry. And the fact that the kids, as well as ourselves, could communicate with them in a compassionate way really had an effect. And that was memorable, as well as having people come over. I've had this experience also, because not our presentations were very factual,
mm-hmm.
heavily documented consequences of abortion and the effects that has. And we would relate it to the themes of the conferences. So we might be talking about the effect of online medical exams and abortion pills, or we might be talking about emotional effects from sexual trauma. Different kinds of things that relate to what the organization does. And
don't find people talking about that a lot.
Right.
The negative effects. You know, Millie had a very personal story, and both of you, I'd imagine, thousands of people that have talked to Concepts of Truth, and you're aware of those stories. Those stories, though, aren't volunteered in places like the UN unless somebody's really intentional about doing that. So I just have to imagine how that's received sometimes. You just really bringing up something that not commonly brought up.
Right. And we have had people, I've had people come up to me and say, I never knew this.
Oh, wow.
I never knew. My daughters asked me about abortion, and when we Google, you find only the positives. And it's hard to get to those pages because of the way the internet works. Certain things are featured more than others, and there's a priority. And so that was very, that had a big effect. And we would have an opportunity to meet people at the UN and invite them to a training of counselors that Millie and her staff would do to train them in how to counsel women who've suffered from reproductive loss. And it was a one-day training, and people of all faiths came to this. And to see them respond to this Christ-centered curriculum, even though they were of all different faiths. And at the end, I will never forget these women of all faiths stand up and give their testimonies. A number of them were from Africa, and they said, in our country, you can't talk about trauma from abortion. You can't talk about trauma from miscarriage.
Really?
It is taboo. And miscarriage is a very common problem.
Why do you think that is in Africa that you can't speak about that?
Yes.
Do you have any idea why that would be a sensitive subject there?
I don't, but I have in written statements had articles about this very subject, that it's just taboo to talk about these things. And
yeah, I've never heard of that. It's very interesting how that gets banned or restricted in places where you would not figure it that it should be.
Well, it's related
like, why would Africa care?
Yeah. Well, the heavy miscarriage is related to some of their practices, like genital mutilation, which they don't want to, you know, necessarily change at the moment. That is changing. In fact, I went to an event today just on this subject, 200 million victims.
Oh, my.
And so there.
Yeah, I'm not sure the general public knows about that kind of procedure or what that means. It'd be very, you know, foreign to think about that in the United States.
Right.
So there's probably some practices that other countries don't want to have known. Mm-hmm. And for that, you know, just restrict this whole subject.
Right. But they so appreciate a forum to have conversations.
Yeah.
Like this training provided.
Yeah. But if you bring up the negative things, the reality about abortion and what this is going to lead to, then people that you would not figure would be agreeing with you all of a sudden are coming to you and saying, wow, I never knew. And thank you for bringing this up.
Right.
And that's something that Christians don't understand. For a long time, I've done work in the United Methodist Church. And one of the things that we were able to do in, I think it was 2016 in Portland, there was a pro-choice group. It was the RCRC, and it was something, the Coalition for Reproductive Choice. I forget what the first acronym was in that. But we had to get up and convince very liberal people who were very pro-abortion to ban that organization. And we were able to do it when one of the persons got up and said the reality that this organization supports abortion up to the last day of pregnancy, and talked about how gruesome some of the realities of abortions that happen in the third trimester and what that looks like, and how that is for the mother and the child. And that really swayed a lot of people. And a lot of people that we didn't think were going to vote to oust that interest group, they voted to end it. And so it really does make an impact just to talk about the facts. And that's what your organization does. You have all of that information.
Yes.
And people could come to you and consult with you about all that and learn.
Yes. And also to educate countries who are not fully aware of what the landscape looks like with regards to abortion and may be confused. And so, for instance, recently there was an event and a friend of ours at another NGO had an opportunity to tell an ambassador that, you know, there is no international right to abortion. And that had been a source of confusion. And believe it or not, there are a number of groups at the United Nations who are pro-life, pro-family, and they have locked arms. They may not agree on a lot of things, but these are countries that have come together and signed a document called the Geneva Consensus Declaration. There's about 30 okay. countries, and they have locked arms on these issues.
Okay.
And they're making the statement that we believe we are pro-life and pro-family, and we want to be united.
So 30 countries have signed off on this, and I don't want you to name all 30, but is the United States on that list?
Well, this was spearheaded under the Trump administration when Nikki Haley was the ambassador.
Really? Wow.
And it's only been in existence probably a couple of years, maybe 3 years. But with the Biden administration, the United States backed out of the declaration. So we are no longer a signatory.
What do you think about that?
I think that's very unfortunate.
Yeah. Yeah. So all that work and that opportunity to be on the books as being a pro-life country.
Yes. But people who were involved with the White House Health and Human Services Administration under the Trump administration continue to advance these ideals.
So the work continues.
The work continues, and there's an organization, International Institute for Women's Health, that's active in trying to make people aware of these issues.
Yeah, and part of the high-level thing that you talk about here that I don't think the public – it's hard to register is we're making statements, we're writing legislation or resolutions. I would believe, I don't know if they're formally called that in this system, but that's the way I would think of it. You know, resolution is you write this statement or you get something like this passed, and then for years to come, it allows both government and other funded organizations to get behind that statement, get funding, and to do work.
But I do want to clarify one thing.
Sure.
Yes, the United Nations works on resolutions, and NGOs have an opportunity to have input on those, depending on what committees you sit on. But when I refer to written statements that our organization writes several times a year, these are written statements in advance of conferences. And so you're basically writing about the theme of the conference, and you are kind of featuring your interests in those themes.
And
what's been really exciting, at least for me, the statements I've written, I've been able to juxtapose the United Nations charter language in some cases with their actual practices, and there's definitely inconsistencies there. And it's helpful for them to be reminded of that.
Yeah, you know, so I'm on the steering committee of the Institute of Religion and Democracy, and a branch of that that's called UM Action. They're a small religious think tank in Washington, D.C., and they do the same kind of work. And that's the only way that I would have a shot at knowing what you're talking about right now, just to be honest.
Okay.
You know, but what they would do is we would be elected delegates within the church and go to these conferences were resolutions, and then we had a book of discipline, which was a second book that was more like church law. And if that something got changed there, it was, you know, it could really shift things. The resolutions, it was a huge volume that just had all kinds of contradictory statements in it. But if you got your resolution in there, you could do something and get funding from church dollars, for lack of a better way to describe it. So all this being said, there was organizations like yours, and one of them was UM Action. They would write statements, and then they would hand them to us as we walked in, or we could access that information. Then we could do speeches off of that information. And people just don't realize how helpful that is, because we would have 50, 60 pieces of legislation to look over and to possibly speak about. We'd have to strategize, and it would happen very quickly. And you'd have to sort of get your thoughts together, and you're always hoping that, man, you just get up and say one thing that was really going to sway somebody to come your way. And it was these kinds of statements that people were writing. You'd access that. And if it wasn't there, you had nothing sometimes. Now, I think maybe the real great delegates, you know, had this all in their head. You know, me just being trained, like, you know, I went there for the first time in 2008 and knew nothing. And I always remember that, because I see people at the United Nations in the same kind of work. And you assume they'd like really know what they're doing. They don't. They're there for the first time. They're sent here, you know, just on something new, and they're reaching out for the information that you're providing, and that's forming their way of thinking and getting into their hearts and what they're going to decide to do. So it is really, I think it's really hard for people to understand how that comes about, but that could affect everything. And so am I getting close to what a written statement does? Is that fair? Or it could be a lot different.
Sure.
So please.
No, the written statements is something we submit in advance of a conference.
Yeah.
And they post those so that all the NGOs, all the attendees of the conference can look on the website and see, oh, what's everybody speaking about?
Yeah.
They form the basis for our presentations, broadly speaking.
Yeah.
Separate from that are the resolutions. But the written statements become part of UN documents. You know, they're public documents, and you can find them on the UN website. And actually, they're on the concepts, our written statements are on Concepts of Truth's website also. But they're very informative. And so people can look through the written statements from the different organizations and see what they're about and see what information they're providing. So that's very helpful.
Yeah.
Separate from that are resolutions that are worked on by many different groups and ultimately become UN law.
Yeah.
We're not an advocacy lawmaking legislative. We're not in that process at the moment.
Okay. So you don't see how those statements could affect that upper level of lawmaking.
Certainly people who are influenced by that and attend the resolution sessions, which we may do in the future, they will, you know, use that information and those sources and, you know, whatever cited in support of their own position.
Yeah.
And there are other pro-life groups that would, you know, find that information useful.
Yeah. So they talk about like the sausage getting made in, you know, the Congress. And I often think of this being the same way. You know, how does something become law, or how does some kind of movement within the UN get to be the way that it is? And that's my thinking. Again, it might be a little naive or simplistic, but when people hear that this is what you got to do to really have an impact, they sort of back away, like, oh my God, I'm writing statements and hoping that they get published. But I would want to say to our audience, this really does make a big difference, that there's people out there operating, you know, making public statements, writing those things down, and other people are going to pick that up. And what we hope is they're going to grab hold of it, use it, and it's going to create a movement in a certain direction. And what we hope is that it's going to glorify God. It's going to be of Christ's design.
Amen.
And that could happen. In fact, let me make a bold statement. In this venue, that's how it's going to happen. That's the work. You can't just go in there and say, I want to change this. And it's, you know,
it happens like that. It happens in our presentations, but also one way that it significantly happens also is you attend events or you're sitting in the hallways and you're meeting people all the time.
For sure.
It's all about meeting people and having those one-on-one conversations. And I've had a number of conversations just in the last 2 days about our curriculum and it's faith-based, what it's about, how healing, you know, how we find forgiveness and hope.
You're telling people about Christian things, teachings of Jesus Christ in many different ways. And you could put it in written statements and make pronouncements to groups. But just as important, you're staying there all day long, having conversations in the hallway, building relationships with people, trying to win hearts and minds. And it's year after year kind of work. You know, how many years have you been doing this now?
6 years.
Yeah, so it takes plenty of time. That's another thing that I think that people don't realize. Like they want to, you know, get elected president or make some kind of big action that really quickly changes something. This is slow change, and it happens gradually. And it can happen, but it's a lot of work. Yeah, so I think you've been doing this for years, and talking with Millie Lace, years and years, and concepts of truth, all that goes into that. It's some difficult work. It's not easy, you know. But you definitely, in order to spend this much time and effort on it, you really have to believe in it.
They do an amazing work, and it's such a privilege to participate in that. And to see the fruits of it and just to know Millie and see what she's been doing with the organization, it's very encouraging to look at the curriculum and see how Christ-centered it is and to, you know, and to know that here that there really is healing and hope for people and to know that you might have an effect in making people aware of this being there is an honor.
Hi everyone, Dr. Hoffman here. I want to tell you about our dinner auction fundraiser to support the Foundation for Christian Counseling. This year we have two auction dinner events, April 21st, 6 p.m. at the Crane Room in Newcastle, and April 28th, 6 p.m. at Gianelli's 2 in Greensburg, Pennsylvania. These events will feature a live and silent auction along with guest speakers from the community. All proceeds will go to support the Foundation programs, which include counseling grants, community marriage and parenting programs, opioid crisis response, and education and support for pastoral counselors. The Foundation saves lives by delivering faith-based clinical interventions and support to some of the toughest to reach places. This is your chance to get involved in a great mission. The Foundation provided over 3,500 counseling sessions to those in crisis last year. To continue our mission, we need your support. Join us at the upcoming dinner auction fundraiser. Visit our website to sign up today. I'll be there, and I hope to get a chance to meet you also. Together, we can transform communities one family at a time. Josephine, it's been really great to have both you and Millie Lace here on the podcast and to talk about Concepts of Truth International, your work at the UN, your work with post-abortive trauma, and everything that you do nationwide and international. It's just really amazing. I think that what I would say to the folks is that anybody in any local church could have the kind of impact that your organization is having. And it really starts out with what you did. You took the gifts that you had and you responded to something that you saw a Christian organization working out in the community. You saw in the newspaper. And you acted on that. And that's how things happen. That's how God works in our hearts to spur us on to do big things. I hope that people will check you out on the website and find out what you're doing. And this is a really just the one of the greatest organizations that I've seen. I mean, it's just really great work that y'all are doing. So thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having us. This was really a great opportunity for us too.
Awesome. Well, let me say a prayer for the folks to end us out today. Especially, I want to lift up anybody who is struggling with post-abortive trauma. Let us pray. Lord, I give you thanks for Millie Lace and Josephine Tyne and Lord, all of the people of Concepts of Truth International, all the people who will step forward in faith to work internationally on issues like life-affirming or pro-life issues, Lord. And I want to pray for anybody who is struggling out there with what we've talked about, who are looking back on a decision. Maybe that was an abortion. Maybe that was just listening to somebody in authority who they trusted, and now they realize that God had something different to say. They can clearly hear that. Maybe they're remembering somebody who spoke in their community about an experience that they've had, and they're remembering that now and experiencing deep pain. Lord, we lift them up to you today. We ask for your blessing. And Lord, we pray for all the people who are searching for more in their life, and they're listening to this tonight, and they say that I want to have that kind of passion in my life, where I'd reach out and minister to people, but I don't know how. And Lord, I'd pray that they would take the first step, that they would call out to you, and pray to you, Lord, to say, Lord, I want to give my life to you. I want to make you Lord and Savior tonight. Lord, please come into my life and lead me like the people that I've seen here. And so, Lord, I pray that you'd reach out to these people ready to take that step. And Lord, we pray this all in the name above all names, Jesus Christ.